What if there was one simple pill that could help support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function? Well, introducing new and improved Green Tea CR Phytosome formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's potent, clinically tested, and it works to promote your energy, vitality, cardio health, immunity, and antioxidant defense. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you today to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Even better, call now and get a second free bottle. Purity's B12 Energy Melts. That's your second free gift. Again, for your free bottles of Green TCR and B12 Energy Melts, call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Again, 1-800-218-6030. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to Dr. Dennis Goodman. He's one of my good colleagues here in New York City. He's got a website at dennisgoodmanmd.com. Lots of information there. And he's a versatile guy. He's a national, international speaker. He's been in the media. He's currently a clinical professor and the director of integrative medicine at NYU. Hooray. The place where I trained in internal medicine. And in those days, boy, I had to kind of be a closet integrative kind of guy because, that was not in the mainstream, not well accepted. There was nobody teaching that at that time. And here we have the advent of some greater acceptance, which is terrific. So when confronted with a patient who has a cardiovascular risk, I mean, obviously statins are an option, but say statins may be a bridge too far and you want to work with the patient from a dietary standpoint, being a board-certified lipidologist, the study of lipids, you know, you've obviously read many studies of the effect of diet on lipid profiles and cardiovascular risk. What conclusions have you come to about diet?
Oh, so those are good questions. And I think what we've got to now be clear is there's no such thing as, well, here's the diet for everybody. You know, this works for everyone. And I work in close conjunction with a nutritionist. Part of our prevention team is we have a wonderful nutritionist. Her name's Maria Bella. And I send my patients to talk to her because what we've got to remember is not everybody responds the same way to different dietary programs. Mm-hmm. You've got to sit with somebody and say, well, what if you tried? And what foods can't you stand? And what do you actually, you know, it's no good saying he has the diet, just follow it, and, you know, they refuse to eat something because they're allergic to it. So I think in general, if I'm going to give you some generalizations, most people who've got, when we say lipid problems, they can be improved when you lose weight. And it's not just lipids, obviously. When you lose weight, you reduce your cardiovascular risk enormously because you reduce your risk of diabetes, which we know is a major problem in terms of risk for heart disease.
So we might even add, say, the hemoglobin A1C to our risk profile
exactly.
For people.
Because so that would be something absolute. So when I see somebody whose hemoglobin A1C is getting up there, you know, it's above the normal, but it's not at the range that we would call it diabetes. You know, we're around 6. We call this pre-diabetes. We call this metabolic syndrome. And a lot of times these patients have got a fasting blood sugar somewhere between, you know, 100 and 126. Mm. These patients are on the way to diabetes.
Yeah.
So I can tell them, look, if you don't make the changes now, you will be a diabetic. And now, you know, we land up in a whole new different situation of risk. So we get that warning, and we get it just from the hemoglobin A1C. It's such a useful test. But let me just say this about nutrition.
Sure.
Most of the people that I try to talk to them, I listen, and they're eating too much. There's just too much. You know most patients, they go and they order something or they get food, and they just eat it until it's finished off their plate. Are we living in a society now where if you go to a restaurant, don't you look around sometimes and the waiter or the waitress or it comes with something? You go, how is one person going to eat that? We are eating way too much, and the more carbs that you consume like that, the more sugar that you consume like that, the more there's going to be a weight problem. So and a metabolic problem. So I always tell my patients first, I say, listen, I'm going to send you to the nutritionist, but let me ask you to consider this. If you cut way back on carbs you stop your alcohol.
Yep.
You start exercising.
So wait, so parenthetically, you're not a big believer in, you know, like a lot of cardiologists say, have a glass or two of wine because wine is, no, you know, it's heart healthy, blah, blah, blah.
I'll tell you why. Although we think, you know, that it can't hurt, and there's some studies that say, you know, you can have up to two glasses of wine and it's not going to. I tell people that are not drinking, never start drinking because you think it's going to be good for your cardiovascular system.
Yeah.
Do you agree with this? And there are groups of people that I say absolutely do not drink. If you haven't started, one is if you're overweight, you can't afford these calories.
Yeah. Plus, it seems to augment appetite, according to studies. Now there are studies that say it unleashes the appetite circuits in the brain.
Totally. Exactly. So I tell people don't drink if you can't afford these calories, and also if you've got any family history of alcoholism, you know, you're playing with fire. But so I'm very – that's also part of my history. I always say, is there somebody in your family? So when people say, should I have a glass of wine to raise my good cholesterol or because it's going to – I'd say absolutely not, because it's not a good idea to start getting into that habit. But there are people who drink and they have a drink, and if they – you know, I tell them, look, I'm not taking that away from you. If you don't have a weight problem and you aren't taking it in excess, we think excess is any more than two drinks for a man and one for a woman.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a lot of people who will come tell me they, you know, they're not having two, but they're actually having four. So it's a little bit like the food we were speaking about, you know, when the bottle's open of wine, okay, and you've got a partner who has one glass, I wonder how many people are going to put the bottle back.
Right.
For tomorrow night. They finish it.
Finish it off.
Anyway, so coming back to your point, I believe that nutrition is key. For weight loss. The exercise is crucial. Well, let's make it very important, but it's actually not as important as the nutrition. What we put into our mouths and what we eat and the quantity of calories every day is the biggest risk for being overweight.
You know, in your country of origin, you know, which is South Africa, currently there's a big debate. It's almost like an inquisition of a nutritionist. I think you know him. His name is Tim Noakes, and he's proposed a very low carb diet for cardiovascular prevention. It's almost like the heresy trials of
he's created a real division there, and he's been strong about it. And I'm kind of amazed because, you know, I don't know about you, Ron, but I don't really like to have a fight with my colleagues. I just say, look, this is what I feel, and this is what you feel. But he's gone in strong, and they're very uptight with him. But if you had to ask me which side of the fence I come down on, I'm more in his camp, which is that we are, you know, he's making the point that a very low-carb diet is much, much better for you than what we used to believe is a low-fat diet.
Yep.
And we do know that, unfortunately, Ansel Keys got it wrong. And the American Heart Association and our societies in America thought this is correct. We got to tell everybody you should be on a very low-fat diet and the carbs aren't that important. And look what we got. We have a huge problem, and it exists today, with, you know, high incidence of cardiovascular disease, you know, still 400,000 or 500,000 Americans dying every year of a heart attack, 400,000, and you know, 1.2 to 1.5 million Americans having a heart attack every year. About one in two women are dying of heart disease like men. So we have a problem, and so we didn't get it right with the nutrition that we've been talking about for 50 years. And I, in my practice, I don't know about you, Ron, but I'm very big on telling people I'm not as focused on the fats. If you eat good fats, that to me is fine, provided you keep a low-carb diet.
Right. So let's do a little bit of a lightning round on some of the supplements that you favor, because I know you're an expert at least on a couple. Magnesium and vitamin K. So let's tackle those.
Okay. So I am a big believer. I wrote a book about magnesium called Magnificent Magnesium, and it's got a lot of information. And I started to – this is one of the things I learned when I was at Scripps Clinic Integrative Medicine, that magnesium is really, really important in our nutrition. The body does not make magnesium. You have to get it externally, and it's in, it's very, very important cofactor for over 350 enzyme systems in the body. And what it does is it helps to convert ADP to ATP. For our listeners, that means that these are your energy blocks. It's like you need energy. And so if you don't have enough magnesium, you can have all sorts of problems, starting with fatigue, because your cells are just not functioning properly. And there are a lot of common symptoms that people can have simply because they're magnesium deficient. So I'll give you a few. One is palpitations.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is, you know, people have headaches. You can get chronic inflammation, so they're much more likely to have, you know, things like bowel problems. There's a high incidence of diabetes and atherosclerosis because magnesium deficiency is associated with increased inflammation. So I am very big on checking people's magnesium levels. And I check something called a red blood cell magnesium, because mm-hmm. checking serum magnesium is not good enough. Most physicians will just check a serum magnesium. The problem with that, Ron, is that only 1% of our total body magnesium is in the serum. So you're not getting a real good idea of what's going on in the cellular level. And so RBC, red blood cell magnesium, is what I check. It's not 100%, but it's a lot better than the serum. And most people are deficient because they are not eating a diet that has magnesium in it. And that means the green leafy vegetables. There's also magnesium in sunflower seeds, and things like halibut, and some of it's nuts and grains. But most people are deficient. And I can't tell you how many stories I have of people who, when they started taking magnesium, came back and said, wow. That is another symptom, insomnia. I'm sleeping better.
Mm-hmm.
Blood pressure often comes down. And they tell me they're feeling so much more energy. And I tell people, try it, And most people actually, unfortunately, don't know that we should be supplementing with magnesium. There are a couple that I have. I'd say 10 or 15% of my patients who don't need it because they are very, very good on their vegetables. On their greens. So that's magnesium. And
what's your favorite source of magnesium supplement wise? I mean, there's such an array of possibilities.
Exactly. I do think that the better absorbed magnesiums end in ATE. So we're talking about threonate, glycinate, malate. The ones that end in, oxide, like the hydroxide or oxide preparations, which are actually the cheapest. That's what you get when mm-hmm. you just go to the local stores. Unfortunately, they're not well absorbed, and they often cause GI problems like diarrhea.
Right.
So the one, I'm not advertising. It just happens to be the only one that I like. This technology is called, it's a slow release technology, and it's called magnesium dimalate.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually made by Jigsaw, but
yep.
I don't
push
it.
That's one that we use. Say, yeah, absolutely.
Is that the one? So I just tell patients, listen, this is the one I like. You can get it online. I actually, to be honest, have a whole lot of samples. I keep them in my office. I just give it to people.
Right.
I just say, why don't you try it? If you like this one, you can order it, or otherwise just get one that ends in ATE, and I tell them how much they should take. You know, the general recommendation, Ron, is you take 3 milligrams per pound. So if you weigh 150 pounds, you would take 400 milligrams, 450 milligrams. Mm-hmm. So for
elemental magnesium, because sometimes there's some issues with how it's portrayed on the label.
Yeah, elemental magnesium. So the average dose for women is about 400, and for men about 500 or 600.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, as you know, it's very well, it's very well tolerated, in the sense that there isn't this risk of toxicity. The only group we have to be very, very careful is people who have any renal dysfunction.
Kidney problems.
So if you have kidney failure or any kidney problems, you cannot take it without speaking to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other groups, it's got a wide safety margin, and the only side effect sometimes in some patients is tend to get loose stools. Some people like that because they're constipated. But that's the preparation that I use, and I use my RBC magnesium level. I get it on every single patient, just like I get a vitamin D level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, 80% of them are deficient.
Yeah. Let's move on to vitamin K, because, you know, even I think even among some of your colleagues at the hospital, well-trained physicians, there's some misunderstanding about vitamin K. They might think that it causes blood clots, and some people are afraid of taking vitamin K.
So I'd say most traditional physicians haven't even heard of it. Now, we just got to be clear. There is vitamin K family made up of K1 and K2. Mm-hmm. So vitamin K1, which is just phytoquinones, everyone knows about K1 because it's very, very important for blood clotting. So you need, we need vitamin K to help make certain clotting factors. This is what makes your blood clot. And these blood clotting factors are 2, 7, 9, and 10. We need vitamin K. So that's important. In fact, they have vitamin K1, I'm talking about, in baby formula, because it's so important for blood clotting. Now, what they discovered many years ago, about 50 years ago, is that there's another part member of the family called K2. So vitamin K2 has a different role, Ron, and we've discovered that vitamin K2 is very, very important for activating two proteins in the body. One is MGP, matrix GLA protein, and the other is osteocalcin. So vitamin K2, what its job is to keep calcium in the bones where it belongs and keep calcium out of the arteries. So I happen to have written, this is why you asked me, I've written another book called Vitamin K2, The Missing Nutrient.
Uh-huh.
And really, it's called The Missing Nutrient for Heart and Bone Disease. Literally, you can download on Amazon for $2. You can get the digital version. And I explain exactly why it's important to take vitamin K2 when you're taking calcium and vitamin D, for example. Because what we want is that calcium, which is so important, right, for bone formation, is sitting where it needs to be with the bones and not in the blood vessels. The more calcium you're sitting with in a blood vessel, the more likely you are to have, obviously, the manifestations of atherosclerosis. That's how the calcium scan works. The higher the amount of your calcium score, the more likely you are the increased risk you have for cardiovascular events. So I am very clear that if you take vitamin D, what's the major action of vitamin D? It's to increase calcium absorption from the gut. You should take vitamin K2 when you take calcium or vitamin D. And I have this quartet of magnesium, which is also important for bone formation and helps. There's a balance with calcium and magnesium in the bones. But when you ask me about my favorite supplements, in terms of this quartet, it's calcium, it's magnesium, it's vitamin D, It's vitamin K2 and calcium for women. I don't give calcium supplementation to men. But I think it's really important when women are taking their calcium that they take it with K2. So there's a lot of literature, there are a lot of studies. I'm not going to sit here and quote them to you, but showing that when you have a diet that's high in K2 or you supplement with K2, you're less likely to have both heart problems and osteoporosis. So it's and the studies are coming out more and more. A lot of them have been observational. And I'm sure you're going to ask me, so how do we get K2? Well, it's another story, a little bit like magnesium. It is also found in green vegetables, spinach, kale. It's found in milk and egg yolks, but not at the levels that we need it. So the only place where you have a high vitamin K2 content in the diet is in Japan, where they make something called natto.
Which Americans don't like very much, generally.
They don't like it, I've actually got a colleague and a friend who is making natto. She's a microbiologist and making it in her garage. And she delivers it in a bottle to you once or twice a month. Yeah. And you can take a teaspoon every day. But if you take, 100 grams of natto is a lot of K2. We only need a tiny amount of K2, I think, to have enough in our system. And I recommend 180 micrograms a day.
Yes, very good.
Of K2.
We're on
and
the same page.
What's important, it should be in the, the MN7 form. So we want it. There's two types, Vitamin K2 is found both, it's got to do with the length of the side chain, and you want to make sure that you're taking MN7, which is the longer side chain, because that's the better absorbed and it's longer acting. So I think we're on the same page. So I don't know about you, but I give vitamin D when people mm-hmm. are deficient, and I yep. like. I don't, where do you like to see a vitamin D level, Ron? That's, let me pick your.
I brain. Like to see at least a 40. Yeah, you know, I and I think for osteoporosis, you can't really optimize bone density without getting vitamin D at least 40. And I'm not worried that a patient gets it up to, you know, 60, 70, 80. We pause yeah. if patients, you know, get over 100, but I haven't seen much toxicity. So
no, I agree with you. I agree with you. So I tell patients, you know, I like to see it 45 to 55 is a kind of optimal level. If they're above 40, I don't feel we have to do anything, you know. But I give vitamin D in the form of vitamin D3 with K2. So there are a couple of products that are, so it's easy to take them together. So I like to see a lot of my patients are on 5,000 a day of vitamin D3 plus K2, plus vitamin K2, and there happens to be a product that has that combination.
Any other supplements that you're particularly fond of for cardiovascular prevention?
I'm from South Africa, and, you know, we have something there called Safari, and I call it the Big Five. And I generally have this conversation because, you know, you can go kind of crazy with all the different supplements. And if you speak to a lot of the naturopaths and people that are doing this all the time, and I see these patients come to me, they're taking 30, 40 different pills every day.
That's much. Yeah.
And I don't poo-poo it. I just tell them, look, if you can take it, I can't tell you it's not right. I tell you what, I look at, for me, there are a couple of major ones. And I like a multivitamin that I think covers, you know, the basics for everybody with the C and E and, you know, some lycopene and stuff like that and the B vitamins. And then I like magnesium, vitamin D, CoQ10, and an omega-3 mm-hmm. in the form of a fish oil or a krill oil and a probiotic.
Are you impressed with studies on things like vitamin E? Because, you know, vitamin E has been back and forth in the literature. And, you know, some of the studies have been maybe not the greatest studies because they're looking at the wrong form of vitamin E. But vitamin E was all the rage 20 or 30 years ago, as you might know, in integrated cardiology.
Exactly.
It's kind of lost its luster. Do you agree?
No, exactly. I totally agree. I think that, you know, there were studies that looked like everybody was very excited about vitamin E, but then it came out that if you take too much vitamin E, it may not be good for you. And I tell people that we certainly, I don't think, should be taking more than 400 mm-hmm. Micrograms a day. And I don't, you know, there's certain people that do tell patients to take it, like some of the, you know, the people for the retina or that, you know, some people.
Yep.
Pushing it for memory, mm-hmm. you know, and the brain. But I don't think we've got the data on, and I think that, you know, the mixed tocopherols
yeah.
are probably the way to go, mm-hmm. and not more than 400. And I tell my patients, let's just take it as part of your multivitamin. So
indeed.
That's how I don't consider myself a quote expert on all the supplements, but I do know I consider myself an integrative physician. I think I'm covering the bases with those six that I told you.
So the one question I'd want to ask you before we sign off, the homocysteine connection,
yes.
In my opinion, it was prematurely abandoned by cardiologists. That you know, there was some enthusiasm for it, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then they did one study that said, okay, patients with cardiovascular risk, they gave them B vitamins. It didn't help.
Exactly.
And I think they threw the baby out with the bathwater because I think homocysteine is important for vascular disease. Maybe not heart disease, but certainly, you know, atherosclerosis
and
in the brain.
Totally. And especially in patients who MTHFR, you know, where they have a heterozygous or homozygous, because those patients who have, the, you know, that problem with high homocysteine, I think are, you know, we think they're increased risk. We have clearly shown that homocysteine was another, you know, it was a risk marker, a marker of risk. That got thrown out when people said, well, we don't know, you know, we can't prove that by lowering it makes any difference. It's the same. We got that same thing with LPA, which nobody would question that it's a significant risk factor. But just because we haven't been able to prove that bringing it down makes a difference, we're not throwing it out. So I'm in agreement with you. I measure it, and it just adds to the information I get on a patient. So sometimes when I'm trying to decide, should I, shouldn't I use a statin, and the homocysteine very high or the MTHFR positive, I'm more likely to be aggressive. So I think it's putting all these things, you know, that's why, I mean, we're on the same page. You can't just look at a patient and say, okay, well, you need this and that. We've got to look at the big picture. We've got to take all these things into account, and then we decide what's the best thing to do. And my approach is always, let's go natural as much as possible. That means lifestyle changes, the supplements that we spoke about, and we go to medication, and we go to statins if you for secondary prevention, and in primary prevention, we have a good think about it. One thing we should just mention we didn't is red yeast rice, which patients don't want to take a statin.
Yeah.
They don't want to take a pharmaceutical statin, but they will take red yeast rice, which is a statin. It's lovastatin. And they will take it, and I'd rather see them take that than take nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we should just be clear that when people say I'm taking red yeast rice, that they don't think, well, I'm not on a statin. They're on a natural statin,
yes,
and it has the same potential for side effects, and it's just that it happens to be a low dose.
Yeah.
So, Ron, we've discussed a lot of things, and I'm very grateful to you for having me on the show.
That's my pleasure. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action as regards you? How can people find you, your website, and your books?
Right. So I have a website, dennisgoodmanmd.com, and I've written these books. One's called Magnificent Magnesium. One's called Vitamin K2, The Missing Nutrient for Heart and Bone Health. And then I've also written a book about omega-3s and krill oil. So if you go on Amazon and you put my name in, you'll see these books. I'm at NYU. I'm Director of Integrative Medicine here. And my email address is dennis.goodman@nyumc.org.
And if a patient has a heart problem, you still seeing patients?
Yeah, I am seeing patients. There is a number. I'm happy to give it to people. It's 646-754-2000, and that's the main number. And I'm happy to see anybody that would like an integrative approach to their cardiovascular problem. And sometimes Ron, they're far away.
Yep.
So I always try to tell people people that I know. I think one thing I do recommend is if you're looking for an integrative person, if you go to the abihm.org website, which is American Board Integrative Holistic Medicine, you will see a list of the board certified integrative physicians. And I think that's a good start if you're not in an area where you know somebody like the big cities.
Well, I think the advantage of someone coming to see you is that you're the best of both worlds when it comes to cardiology, because yes, you do the holistic, the integrative stuff, and maybe that's something that your local naturopath might be somewhat familiar with, but you also have a deep background in conventional cardiology, so you know when to hold and when to fold with alternative therapies, and sometimes the best medicine is medicine, or sometimes even interventional cardiology or surgery. So, I think that's a useful perspective.
Yep. Yeah, that's my goal, that I look at it from the big picture. And that's what I'm trying to do, because I'm trying to figure out how do we bring the two sides together so we can educate each other, and then we have more people that are what I call in the middle with a perspective of both sides, and then we can offer patients what's best for them. And I always tell my physician colleagues, if you don't know, send them to somebody that you trust and respect, rather than saying, these supplements are a waste of time.
Indeed.
And that's why I've got several of my colleagues now starting to send me patients who don't want to take a statin. And they actually, some of them, and this is where times have changed, Ron, they say, so how much magnesium should I give them? I rounded with one cardiologist, very traditional, and he heard me talk about magnesium for 2 weeks, and he said he now is a believer, and he says, Dennis, you changed my practice. I cannot tell you how many patients now I've got on magnesium that thank me.
That's great.
I can't give you a better advertisement than that. And this is a cardiologist who would have told me before, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, more power to you in spreading the word about the benefits of natural approaches to cardiovascular disease. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Dennis Goodman, for joining us. Dennis Goodman is at NYU the Department of Integrative Medicine. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ron.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.